Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, April 27th, Butter and Eggs Day, 2019. This is episode 1586. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by DigitalOcean. Deploy your apps on the simplest cloud platform with no surprises. Join a community of over 3.5 million developers on DigitalOcean. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. And by SimpliSafe. Protect your home with the exceptional security system that will stop fear at your front door. Visit simplisafe.com/twit for free shipping on any system order. And by LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Just remember your master password, and LastPass remembers the rest. Visit lastpass.com/twit to learn more. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got your smartphones. We got your smart watches. We don't got your Galaxy Fold. Yeah, I was, I was going to bite the bullet for you. You. I do it all for you. I was going to go out and buy that $2,000 folding phone, which was supposed to go on sale yesterday. I was going to run over to my little T-Mobile store and sit plunk down $1,980 plus tax and pick that sucker up. But you know what? Samsung has delayed it. And I'm kind of, I'm a little relieved. I figured, well, so you know what happened, right? The Fold is not the first folding phone, we should say. Samsung did not get pride of place for that. There's something called the Royal, R-O-Y-O-L-E, which was debuted in January at the Consumer Electronics Show. The Royal was not the most swiftest, you know, product, and I don't think anybody really bought it. But, you know, Samsung, right? That's good. A Samsung phone, that's going to be great. Samsung's the leader, number one in the world in smartphones. So when they announced a folding phone a couple of months ago, actually, didn't they say they were going to do it? Or maybe it was just a rumor. I can never distinguish the two in January. But in any event, they announced it and they said it's going to be out in April. Then last week, week before last, really, they sent out review units to a bunch of reviewers. So that's the way product reviews work in the tech industry. A select few, lately, you know, a lot of YouTubers and bloggers used to be. I can't win. It used to be because I did a radio show and podcasts that I couldn't get review units. They all went to the newspapers and magazines. And then for a brief, very brief period of time, I got review units. I never really liked getting review units from these companies because it's not, first of all, you don't get to keep them. It's for a limited time. So you, especially with a phone, you can't really dig in because you're not going to have it long enough to make it yours. So it's kind of hard to review devices when you only have them for a few weeks, at least not sensibly. I also didn't like it because you'd hear from the PR department. They would say, when are you going to do that review? How's that review coming along? And then when the review comes out, why did you say that? You better justify it, that kind of thing. Fortunately, I didn't that period of time didn't last too long because then radio and podcasts weren't hot anymore. It was all about the YouTubers, and YouTubers now get the lion's share, and blogs, tech blogs, get the lion's share of review units. It's fine with me. Like I said, I'm fortunate enough I can afford to actually buy these products, and, you know, it works out pretty well because after I'm done with the review, I can always send them to back for, you know, sell them or send them to family. And, you know, my daughter breaks a phone every few months, so she's always got a new phone, which is a hand-me-down, right? So there's, you know, it works out. I can live with it. It's starting to hurt a little bit when these devices are getting to be thousands of dollars, but, you know, I'm glad I, for instance, bought the Samsung Galaxy S10 Plus. As you probably know, if you've listened, I'm singing its praises. Before that was the iPhone XS Max, which I really, really liked until the Galaxy 10 Plus, the one that's confusing, the 10 Plus came out, and I like that better. That's my what they call daily driver, the phone I put in my pocket on the way to work every day. And then, I had heard the first day that these reviewers, these 20 or so people, got their phones, there was this rumbling of, hey, you know what? I get it. Oh, folding is a great idea. You get a little phone on the front. I mean, really little, that you just use for notifications and stuff. And then when you need a bigger screen, you open up. It's more than 7 inches. It's like, oh, wow, cool. They said, I get it. This is not a bad idea. This is a good idea. Because we were thinking maybe it was kind of a janky idea. Then day two comes along. And report after report, I broke my Galaxy Fold. The screen has failed. At least two or three of the reviewers peeled what seemed like a protective layer. Samsung's done this before. They've kind of pre-installed screen protectors. And I don't like screen protectors, so I would have done the same thing. So they peeled them off. And turns out they should have put in big letters, do not peel this off, because when you peel it off, the whole thing falls apart. But other reviewers had problems, too. There were enough, six or seven broken screens out of how many, 10, 20, 30 that they sent out, that's a cause for concern. At first, Samsung said, you're folding it wrong. But eventually, I think Samsung realized, maybe we don't want a repeat of the Galaxy Note 7 debacle. And really, it wouldn't have been, because the Note 7, maybe a dozen blew up out of millions and millions to hundreds of millions sold. They had to recall all of them. Because, you know, you don't want to send out a phone that has even a small risk of blowing up. This is worse. This is worse. A significant percentage of these phones just broke in day two. So I think Samsung wisely said, back to the drawing board. But they're also being kind of funny about, they're being a little sensitive. There's a great blog called iFixit, iFixit.org. Love these guys. Know them well. They've been advertisers in the past. They specialize in selling parts and making repair manuals for all kinds of stuff, from McDonald's Happy Meal toys to high-end phones. And it's their practice to, as soon as a new interesting device comes out, to get one, take it apart, and do what they call a teardown and show it, you know, on the website. And they did a teardown of the Galaxy Fold. And they said, you know, after we do the teardown, we see why the folds are having problems. These OLED screens that Samsung uses are very, very sensitive. And there's all sorts of places stuff can get into the screen. There's gaps. When you fold it and open it, there's gaps. So, of course, they're having problems. Then Samsung sent a cease and desist. Samsung will not learn. It's a bad idea. They actually complained to the supplier that gave iFixit the phone, and they did get the phone before it was officially released. So I guess the complaint's kind of reasonable. iFixit says, we have no legal or moral obligation to take this review down, but we're going to do it anyway. Okay. We don't have to, but we're going to. Okay. I read it, as many did, fortunately, before it came out. So I knew the conclusions of it. I'd seen the pictures. And I suppose there are people, plenty of them probably, who saved the review, downloaded all the images. And so it's out there, which is why Samsung should just go, well, we don't like it, but what are you going to do? That's the way life goes. And let's not call more attention to the fact that this phone has problems. Let's not make it even worse. That they did. Anyway, I'm just glad that they had the good sense to just pull it out and say, hey, yeah, we got a problem, and we're not going to sell it. Of course, then AT&T sends out an email to subscribers saying, you'll be able to get your Samsung Galaxy Fold phone. What did they say? I can't remember. Was it May 13th, June 13th? Like, you know, they gave a date. Samsung said, oh, no, we don't. They what did they make it up, Samsung? Where'd they get it from? In any event, there you have it. The saga, the sad saga of the folding phone. There's another one coming out in a couple of months this summer from a company called Huawei. Maybe you heard about them. They're the one apparently owned by the Chinese military. That's another saga I'll tell you sometime. Apparently owned by the Chinese military. They have a folding phone. It's kind of an interesting idea. It might even be a better idea. It's a kind of a trifold. So, I am still kind of bullish on the idea of a phone that has a small footprint, I guess is what we call it, but eventually expands out to something bigger. And so, just for you, I will be spending that money someday. I think Huawei was even more than $2,000. Oh, boy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Yep, archive.org has the iFixit teardown. Thank you, chat room. It's already been archived. More of your calls. You have actually your calls coming up. All of your calls. That's hysterical. Of course, archive.org has it. You can't take anything off the internet. It's permanent. It is the Kimmy Schaffer Show. Kimmy, don't take no Schaffer. Hello, Kim Schaffer.
Good morning.
Our phone answerer,
Happy
phone angel.
Butter and eggs to you.
I was wondering because I'm looking out the window and there goes a Stanley Steamer, then a Ford Model T. And I'm thinking, have I gone back in time?
Hey, that was our old building that you could see all that.
You noticed perhaps seconds.
Don't lie.
No. Look out the wall. You don't have a window. That for some reason, they're driving all around. The reason I was a little late, I got here, people didn't see it, like, seconds before the show started.
That's not unusual.
excuse me? Okay, you're right. But this time, I have a really good reason. I was driving behind. It looked like a Stanley Steamer. I mean, it was like the ancientest car. It was wide open. It looked extremely uncomfortable for its occupants.
It was going about 5 miles an hour.
And it was going... wasn't moving too fast.
Do they put those Burning Man art cars in the parade? There's a bunch of those.
They do
in this,
also.
In town.
We should explain perhaps a little history of our beautiful little Northern California town called Petaluma. Mm-hmm. It's the first town in Sonoma County on the way over from Marin County, and it's a little town, but it's also the last town on the San Francisco Bay. What we call our Petaluma River is really a tidal slough, a finger of the San Francisco Bay, and for that reason, a lot of stuff from the northern part of the state was brought down to here and then transshipped. And it also became a big capital for eggs and dairy.
Yep.
So this was, in fact, at one point, they called it the egg capital of the world. I don't know if that was hyperbole or true, but we had a lot of eggs. Did you see? You can Google Petaluma, world's largest omelet. And there's a picture of a really large omelet they made in like 1920 to celebrate. It's a bunch of flappers making it. It's the funniest thing I ever saw. Anyway, we still celebrate, even though we are no longer the egg capital of even Northern California. We still celebrate. We are. Do you know what we are, though? The duck capital. Petaluma duck is widely celebrated.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, we celebrate our heritage with butter and eggs.
Gives everybody an excuse to have a parade.
Yeah.
And drink Bloody Marys.
And drive old cars around.
Drive old cars.
And there's usually a flyover from old biplanes and stuff. And it's kind of fun, but you and I have to work every butter and eggs day. So that's okay. We used to have our studios right smack dab in the middle.
Get to go and peek out every once in a while.
Enough of that. Nobody cares. I'm sad to say, but... you're right.
Old Town Charm.
It is Butter and Eggs Day.
Yeah.
So you'll find it on YouTube, the Petaluma Chicken promotional film from 1932, the world's biggest omelet, if you Google it.
I'll do that.
you're
I'll be missing, right there.
You're missing a lot of fun and a lot of eggs. So have you been a busy person.
Yeah. Let's go to William in Aurora, Colorado on line one and needs a printer, but wants to ask you what would be best for his very occasional needs.
I am the king.
King of printers?
Of spending people's money.
Oh, that's right.
And print.
And your own.
And my own. But I didn't, you know,
not the
I really
fold.
Was.
You did not get the fold. Back
me up here. I was ready to go out and buy that fold
you
so
said
it happened
you,
for today.
I told you not to. You said you were. You said you weren't. You said you were. And you didn't. So I'm proud of you. You
I was just thinking. I was just thinking. If it breaks, I can bring it back, right?
That's true.
What's the harm?
Yeah, I don't know.
I felt like I owed it to everyone. In any event, I was saved by the bell.
Awesome.
Hi, William. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome to the show.
Oh, well, good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm trying to decide on printer. Mm-hmm. And the issue I came up, my old printer clogged on the print heads.
Yeah, this is the general reason I don't like, I use inkjet. Inkjet's great for a lot of things. It's the best color. It's certainly the best photo printing. Even pros will use inkjets to print their, portraits for sale, for instance. But there is one little issue with some inkjets, which is, if you don't use them enough, the heads can get clogged. Now, I've talked to the folks at Epson, our sponsor, because they get mad at me when I say that. And they say, no, we coat our heads with a special coating so they don't get clogged. What kind of printer was it?
An Epson.
And I said to them, but I keep getting calls from people with Epson. So more modern Epsons are probably better. But the alternative to that,
several years old.
Yeah, so that's you could take a chance to get another Epson. I think the Epson's functionality is really good, and I really think the EcoTank, they deserve a little pat on the back for that, because most inkjet companies, that's the other negative about inkjets, make all the money, not on the printer. They sell the printers at a loss
on the ink,
on those expensive cartridges. So for Epson to come along and say, well, We're not going to do it. We're going to give you an ink tank that you fill up that lasts for tens of thousands of pages. And now they have to charge more for the printer, obviously. But it's still a net gain. It's like 1/20th the cost for the ink.
Right.
So that's why I like it. The way to go, if you really don't print much, is a laser. And there are inexpensive lasers. And the cost per page on lasers is pretty low. It's probably down there with the EcoTanks. So, but Epson doesn't make those. I use a Brother, and it was cheap, and it works fine. Colors, no color, and even a color laser jet, which is a lot more expensive, color's kind of washed out. It's only good for what they call business graphics. Look for that weasel word, those weasel words, business graphics. No. When you see that means washed out color. Don't print a photo with it.
Usually, though, I do need to print a photo here and there, though.
Then I would take a look at the Epson. Nobody makes better photo printers than the Epson. Nobody. I mean, every photographer I know uses an Epson photo printer. Some of the high-end printers, too. I mean, they make very expensive photo printers, but those are the printers that they use. I would not hesitate to recommend an EcoTank. Maybe get one of the higher-end ones. And it's been my experience that they don't clog because of this coating that they put. They really paid attention to that. And I do think you save so much money with the tanks.
Well, I was considering the 4750.
Yeah, very nice.
EcoTank.
Yep, very nice. And look for one that says particularly photo printing, because you need special paper, special inks to do a really good job. I think it's safe. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There's a refurbished USB Brother laser printer for $50 at Staples today. Criminy. But no laser I've ever found prints photos as well as an inkjet. You just got to do it. Let's talk a little bit about our sponsor, DigitalOcean. I love DigitalOcean. If you're a programmer, if you're learning, like me, I'm a hobbyist. It's a great choice. But if you also want to put code in production, anybody who wants to deploy apps on a cloud platform, there's no easier, more affordable way to do it than DigitalOcean. I just love DigitalOcean. I've used it for years. Father Robert used it for a long time, too. He would set up, servers and so forth. See, in the old days, what you would do is you'd go to a server company, you'd call them up, you'd say, I'd like to get a Linux server, please. Okay. Can you provision that? Provision it. We'll get back to you in a week. Times have changed dramatically. DigitalOcean allows you to set up one virtual machine or 10,000. It's a scalable compute platform with add-on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities. And you can set up an enterprise-grade SSD-based virtual machine in less than a minute. In fact, should we do it? Let's create a new droplet. That's what they call it in DigitalOcean. You can also add volumes. You see, we have DNS resolution, cloud firewalls, load balancers, all sorts of stuff. I might do the simplest thing. I'm going to create a droplet. Now, you could choose a variety of operating systems, Ubuntu, FreeBSD, Fedora, Debian, or CentOS. You could choose a variety of container distributions. So if you're a Docker fan, they've got Kubernetes, too, for orchestration. You can do that all as well. But I like their one-button installs. This will provision a server with the software you want to use. Let me make this a little smaller so I've got it zoomed way in. So you can. So these are all the things you can set them up with. Look at it. It's a long and getting longer list all the time. You know what? Let's say I want to do a LAMP stack. Most of these are LAMP stacks. How about you want to set up a Mastodon server? That'll be fun. This is the new open source Twitter, okay? And you can choose your plan, the standard plan or a general purpose plan, CPU optimized plan. I'm going to go with standard, and I'm going to dial down the cost. Notice you can get more CPUs, more RAM, more transfer. But for $5 a month, you can get a gigabyte of RAM, 25 gigs of storage on a fast SSD, and I can get a terabyte of transfer, all of that a month. That's pretty cheap, and that's for what I want to do. I'm playing with this. I'm going to set that up. Can you turn on backups, another buck? No problem. It's actually 20% of the droplet price, depending on your droplet. I can add block storage. You can even choose your data center. See, they're all over the world. Should I run this out of Bangalore, or how about Toronto? I always choose San Francisco. That's the easy one for me. I even add my SSH keys to make it easy to log in. Choose a host name. I'm going to call it Leo's Mastodon. They've added a lot more droplets. That's nice. The Mastodon's new. And create. Now I've chosen all the features. Now this is where the guy would call me back in a week, say, "Oh, we got your server set up. You want to use it?" But it's so fast and so easy with DigitalOcean. If you're learning Node.js, see, I have a Node server set up. If you're learning Python, if you have a minimal viable product you're trying to create so you can get some investors, or maybe you've got a production server you want to get running up and fast, this is the way to do it. The easy-to-use control panel, you just saw it, an API lets developers spend more time coding, less time managing infrastructure. I mentioned Kubernetes. Over 2,000 open source tutorials, too, for developers, which is really great. Almost anything you want to do, there's a tutorial on how to do it with DigitalOcean. And the marketplace, which we just showed you, makes it easy to deploy one-click applications. LAMP stacks, Docker, GitLab, Jenkins, Plesk, cPanel, WordPress, whatever it is, even Mastodon, in less than a minute. Almost there. Access the compute resources you need at the lowest possible price, saving up to 55% compared to other providers. There I am. My Mastodon server's not only provisioned with a public IP address, I can log in right now if I want. Let's just go to the console, and you'll actually see the Linux boot up, and I have root access, and I can do whatever I want to it. No additional cost for monitoring alerts, 4.9s uptime, SLA. You get team accounts. You get cloud firewalls. You get full DNS. 12 global data centers, 24/7, 365 world-class support, DigitalOcean. 1 million developers trust DigitalOcean, including this little guy here. Go to do.co/twit today. Sign up and receive a free $100 credit. do.co/twit for a free $100 credit. I don't know if you saw, but my DigitalOcean bill this month, $5.62. It's awesome. Trusted by business, loved by developers, do.co/twit. And as I said, sign up now and you'll get a free $100 credit. We thank DigitalOcean for their support. And we thank you for supporting us by using that special URL and getting the $100 credit, do.co/twit. I can even turn on IPv6. It's a public IPv4 address. I've got four virtual CPUs, 8 gigs of RAM, 160 gigs storage. I could run a public Mastodon server with this. Easy. Easy peasy. Maybe I just will. I love it. do.co/twit. There he is, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek, contributor at techhive.com. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Leo. Happy Butter and Eggs Day.
I have to tell you, you last week told us about these $30 Revo QT5 headphones.
Yes.
I bought a pair. They came this week, and you're absolutely right. Not only are they cool looking, because I got the copper ones, and they're made out of metal. You're right. I put a bigger tip in for more comfort.
And better and ceiling. And more ceiling.
Yeah, better, ceiling which means better canal. Base.
Yes.
And for $30, the Revo Next, the QT5s, they're as good as any headphones.
Can
any
you
inexpensive.
That?
I mean, I have a very expensive pair of over-the-ear electrostatic headphones.
Oh, yeah.
From Hi-Fi Man, but they were $1,000.
Yeah, exactly.
But for in-ear headphones like this, they're as good as anything I've seen. And at $30, why not? You know, let's go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I gave them such a high score on TechHive, because, wow, for $30, as long as you have the right ear tip. That's critical.
Yeah, and I wish they actually shipped with more than three different sizes. Because I don't know if three sizes fits all, but anyway.
Well, yeah, their largest one was certainly the best for me, but I put on an even larger pair of ear tips that worked better.
Yeah. So. Chucky B bought them, loves them.
Oh, cool.
In our chat room. So, yeah, anyway, thank you for the recommendation. You know, one thing I realized, though, looking at this is, and I think I've known this for some time, but it really underscores the fact that there is a huge markup in headphones.
Yes.
That headphones actually, in most cases, don't cost much. And
To make.
And they cost a lot to buy. And when I look at Apple's Beats, for instance, which they spent $3 billion for, there's a huge profit margin in that. Because it says the components themselves aren't that expensive. Even high-quality ones.
Yeah, and they're well-defined. They've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, the design makes a difference, of course.
Yeah, and I think you know, that's why, for instance, the Hi-Fi Man, and their electrostatic, which is more expensive and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think they're better headphones.
Wow, what a clean, clear sound that must be.
Oh, that's, you know what? That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
It's hard to describe, but there's a spatial sense you get where it's airy. You feel like you're in an airy, open room, and you can pinpoint where every instrument is. And that's the difference between most headphones that you get, anything under $500 anyway that you get, and really nice headphones.
Yep.
It's true. And I think it's almost worth getting really nice headphones, because who can listen to music in a perfect setting as loud as they want these
days? You're exactly right, because the room has such an impact on the sound when you're listening to speakers.
Yeah.
And with headphones, that variable is gone. It's just eliminated.
Yeah.
So I agree. I've been listening on headphones since high school. I would lie on the couch and listen
Me too.
To music.
We're of an age, nobody does this anymore, but we're of an age where you'd buy an album, you go to the record store. Yes, kids, they had things, they were pressed vinyl. You'd go and you'd buy them, you'd put on the turntable, and then the nice thing about albums, they had big albums, were big, and so there was lots of liner notes and pictures, and you'd lie on your back with the headphones on, your Cost Pro 440As that weighed 20 pounds.
I think that's what I had.
Of course you did. We all did. And then you'd look at the album cover with your head in the on the back and your hands in the air, and that was that was how we listened to music in the day.
Yep. Way back in the day.
Now everybody listens in the car, on the go, on the run. I see people with Apple AirPods and earbuds in all the time. It's almost like people don't want to walk around without music in their head.
Yeah.
But they're not getting good quality.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
So did you go see the Avengers Endgame?
I did.
No spoilers. I haven't seen it yet.
No. I'm not going to give you any spoilers, but I did want to let you know that the 3 hours that the movie lasts, I wasn't at all looking at my watch or saying, when's this going to be over? So it does, it does move pretty well.
It's pretty long for a mainstream movie these days.
It is. It is. But if you're an Avengers fan, a Marvel fan, really, you will find it very satisfying.
Now, here's the question I always ask. It's the most important question of any Marvel movie.
Yeah.
How long into the credits do I have to stick around?
Believe it or not, in this one instance, there are no post-credit or inter-credit Easter eggs.
That None. Could be a spoiler all alone, all by itself. But that sounds like something's going on there.
It's no spoiler.
Should I draw any conclusions from that? Of course, maybe the name Endgame might also imply something.
Well, there's no spoiler to say that this is being touted as the end of this phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
They've already said it.
They've already said it.
Yeah.
They've said it for a long time. That this is the end of 11 years and 22 movies in what they're calling the saga.
It's such a long movie that I'm seeing articles on Vulture and Pop Sugar on GameSpot about when to pee. At what point in the movie it's safe to get up, run to the bathroom, and come back?
Well, my recommendation, as always, is make sure you do that business before you walk in.
Yeah.
I did, and I was fine until the end of the movie when I had to go do it again. So, 3 hours. If you can't wait 3 hours, then you might want to talk to your doctor.
There are apparently, at least according to Vulture, and you can go read the article because I won't tell you anything. I don't want to spoil anything. 7 bathroom break options.
Oh.
in the movie. And they're very specific.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
In the showing I saw, there were a number of people who got up and left in the movie, presumably to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, because nobody leaves to leave. You're going to stay through the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they came back. Exactly.
Yeah.
I saw it in Dolby Cinema, and the high dynamic range was beautiful. The Dolby Atmos was beautiful. It was filmed entirely on IMAX cameras.
Oh, my. So does that mean you should see it in IMAX digital?
There is an argument for that, certainly. Because the aspect ratio, we talked about this a few weeks ago, which is the ratio of the width of the image to the height of the image, it's taller in IMAX. And it was shot on IMAX. So you're going to see more image. But it's 1.9:1 aspect ratio as opposed to 2.4. So it's not that much taller. It's a little bit taller. And you'll see more information. And if you go to an IMAX, be sure to go to one that has a really big screen. And if you can, if you have a laser illuminated IMAX near you, that's the one to go to. Yeah,
because that's the brightest and crispest.
It's the brightest and the darkest. It has the highest dynamic range of IMAX. Yeah. It's not as high as Dolby Cinema, but it's still higher than regular IMAX. So I definitely recommend that. This is an example of a movie where you might really want to go to an IMAX instead of a Dolby Cinema. Dolby Cinema to me is the best cinematic experience available, The IMAX laser is a second. And since this movie was all shot entirely on IMAX formatted cameras, it might very well be worth doing. If you're a Marvel fan, I recommend it. It's a very nice conclusion to this 22 movie saga.
What is it? So I've only seen about 3, so maybe I should see them
It starts with Iron Man in 2008. Oh, And believe it or not, there have been movies that have played theaters that have played every one of them.
Yeah,
people have been there for days.
For days.
Yes. Oh,
what a nightmare. Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek, contributor at TechHive.com. Bless you. Thank you. And we will see you next time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I saw Tim's... You're talking about what Tim put in the chat room. I know you are.
Yes. Actually, no, I was actually looking at Swamp Rat. The only Avengers I care about are Steed and Peel.
I'm right with you.
You remember that?
I'm right with you on that. Emma Peel, John Steed, that's was the right. Avengers.
They were great.
They're my Avengers.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
Awesome. So a number of people in here in the chat room have seen it in IMAX. He said, Ray Zaria says, saw it in IMAX 3D and the people all seemed skinny. Well, that's weird. I don't know why that would be.
I think the zoom, the aspect ratio.
Something about the anamorphic, something wasn't right. I don't know.
Can you stay for the top of the hour?
Yeah, sure.
All right, no, I'll leave it to you then.
Thank you. Lumpy says, is the IMAX only in 3D? I don't know. But it was in Dolby Cinema, it was in 2D, and I prefer 2D generally speaking. Jay Metz asks, what cans are you wearing now? These are the Heil Sound, what are they called? Pro Set 3. So that's what I'm wearing now. Beatmaster Leo, you should at least have seen Infinity War not to get entirely lost. Yes, that's true. You should see Infinity War. But the weird thing is that all of these movies, which I used to think were just, you know, okay, here's another movie, another Marvel movie. There's Iron Man. Oh, there's Iron Man 2. There's Iron Man 3. There's the Avengers. There's Captain America and so on and so forth. I thought they were all sort of semi-separate, but they're not. They all form more or less, a contiguous group of movies, 22 movies. So not only do you need to see, you certainly need to have seen Infinity War before you go see Endgame. But there are other movies in there that play a really important role in the saga, as they call it. So, for example, in the Guardians of the Galaxy, you learn, you know, the origin of the Infinity Stones, for example, which play a critical role in Infinity War and Endgame. Civil War, I believe Captain America Civil War had some things that live on. I have to say there were a few things that I didn't particularly like about Endgame, and I'm not going to give any spoilers, but I am going to say I thought that the appearance of Captain Marvel, the new character with Brie Larson playing Captain Marvel, she shows up a couple of times and that's it. There's not really much of her in the movie, which I'm disappointed in because I thought she was really great. there's, believe it or not, the first half of the movie almost is essentially action-free. It's just dialogue, people talking, which is kind of refreshing for an Avengers movie. Yes, there's a gigantic battle scene, but I'm not giving away any spoilers there. There's one of those in every single Marvel movie. So, you know. Anyway, let's see. Keith 43 says, I saw Avengers in a Dolby Atmos, right, with a giant screen. I wanted Dolby Cinema because those two are different, right? Well, yes, they are. Let's put it this way. All Dolby Cinemas have Dolby Atmos, but not all Dolby Atmos theaters are Dolby Cinemas. In other words, they don't have the Dolby Vision. I don't know.
All right, Scott.
See you at the top.
See you at the top. Oh, and then you won't believe what happened. Oh, we're on? Okay, never mind. When Ant-Man and the- No, oh, never mind. I haven't seen it. I have no spoilers to offer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. When did that start? Spoiler alert and people getting really upset about spoilers. When did that start? Did it start with social media and Twitter? Because nowadays, you know, you can't, you know, if you're going to tape delay anything, like you're going to tape delay the Super Bowl, you can't go on social media until you watch the game because you'll know what happened. I can't even watch The Voice anymore, but I have to say, no Twitter before The Voice. When did that start, the spoilers thing? FOMO in our chat room says, when television got so good. Maybe. I don't remember, though, in The Sopranos, people say, no spoilers. No. It had something to do with Game of Thrones, they should say it, right? You know? If you don't watch Game of Thrones on Sunday night, you tell everybody in your group not to say anything about it. What when it started with movies?
Yeah, you go to work and people see a movie.
Yeah, but when? Not it wasn't nobody said, oh, that Thin Man, wait till you see what Myrna Loy gets up to. Nobody said that. Oh, don't tell me, I haven't seen it yet. When did that start? Start?
Sixth Sense
had a big twist.
Yeah, I mean,
So I guess when movies had big twists, then you would say, well, don't tell me. But now it's everything. I don't want to know. Yeah, but I understand. But it's people now say any information at all from the movie will spoil it. So on Seinfeld, so that goes back a ways. So on Seinfeld, there was they said something about spoilers in the theater line, according to Dale Poco in a chat room. All right. So it does go back. When was that? That's the 90s, right? So it does go back a few years. I feel like it's almost like it's a thing now, right? You have to have spoiler alerts if you're going to say anything. So we won't say anything. I haven't seen it. Don't know anything. I couldn't spoil it if I wanted to. Back in my day, we got spoiled and we liked it. Go ahead, spoil Gone with the Wind. I know Atlanta gets burned. You can't spoil it. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones. We go line three. RJ in Yuma, Arizona. Hello, RJ.
Hello, Leo. Thank you very much for taking my call.
I appreciate you calling. What can I do for you?
All right. Long time, first time, as they say. So I'm a librarian at a high school here in Yuma.
Nice.
Earlier this year, a patron came in.
Do you have books in your library?
We definitely do, and people definitely read them.
Get over to the phone because you sound a little distant. So that's good to know. I know that lately libraries have to look at other things they can do besides books, like the internet. Internet access is big in libraries.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Do high school students read books though? That's
My gosh! Yes,
they should.
Actually, we have a reading program this year,
nice.
And we had a tie for people read 30. Two kids read 36 books. Throughout the year. So that's
wow.
A lot of reading.
That's 3 books a month.
It is.
Well, what can I do to make your job easier?
Well, thank you. So I was wondering, earlier this year, a kid came in asking for books on programming. We didn't have any. I recommended him to Codecademy, and that worked briefly.
Good choice.
But
good man. That's good. Code.org.
And I was wondering if you could recommend something so that, like, we have some books on programming or coding. I know you recommended Think Python earlier. Is that something you'd recommend for
students? Yeah. So the issue, of course, with that kind of thing is that they date themselves very quickly, right? There's nothing older than an old book on programming. It's like, but there are certain classics that I would absolutely have. Kids are going to be interested in the popular languages of the day, and that changes all the time. And this very programming languages, it's a faddish thing. But your Python's safe, and that's a good choice. There's some classic books that, if you could find them, I think would be so great to have in your library. There's one by Kernahan and Ritchie called The C Programming Language that is a thin little book but is a gem. K-E-R-N-H-I-G-A-N, Kernahan and Ritchie, R-I-T-C-H-I. It's such a classic, it's called K-N-R almost universally.
Okay.
So that's a good one. There are two books that if a kid is actually serious and says, I want to learn to code, they're timeless. One is How to Design Programs. It's widely known as HTDP. And I recently just reworked my way through it. It is the most important programming book, I think, for a lot of people, HTDP. And the nice thing about it, first of all, it's free online, so you could point people to the online page. But you could also get a copy because a kid might be – I'm thinking you got a kid really wants to learn, browsing the stacks, is going to run across this. I taught myself to program with the C programming language way back when, and I think it's still relevant.
So it's like, when I have want to have the digital, everyone has the digital access, but also just have it in the stack to be like, oh yeah, we can point you to that.
Exactly. And so they can get HTTP online. It uses a programming language that's free to download called Racket, which is not a popular language, but is a really good teaching language. And it's actually based on Lisp or Scheme. It's a scheme. So that's a good one. There's another one that's a little harder for a more advanced kid. Maybe you don't need to carry this. It's called SICP, the Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programs. That used to be the first book in college for teaching programming in many, many schools, including MIT.
Huh. Well, this is obviously, this is very fascinating.
It is. It's so, an interesting, it's, you know, it's going to, you're always going to get different answers depending on who you talk to. And the problem I have is you're going to get answers that tend to be faddish because, you know, oh, you got to get JavaScript, the good parts, which is a great JavaScript book.
But then, like, Flash and Java are going out. And
yeah. I mean, JavaScript will be around for some time. It'd probably be a good – but I don't also think – and I'm very opinionated on this. I don't think a kid should start with JavaScript. It's too easy to learn bad habits. And that's why the single best book for any high schooler to start programming with is HTTP. It's hard.
All right.
It's hard, but it's good. And if he learn, if he does that, he will then – be have a leg up, I think, on everybody. And that, and then a good Python book, and a number of them that are really fun. There's some fun books on Lisp and Racket called Realm of Racket and Land of Lisp that are classics also. Actually, Realm of Racket was written by high schoolers. They're designed for high schoolers because it teaches you how to write a computer game.
Okay.
And kids like that.
Yes.
And so both of those are a little more accessible. They have actually cartoon illustrations, but also I think they're aimed at a particular age group. So I think the Realm of Racket, which is really a takeoff on the older Land of Lisp. Those are very good too. And then if you have a smart kid who wants something different, the Little Schemer or the Little Lisper. I think the Little Lisper is out of print, but the Little Schemer is still around. And it's a really odd book because it's just a Q&A all the way through. It's the Socratic method, but it is an amazing book. And I'm just thinking, you know, you're going to grab one kid out of 100, but that kid could end up being the next Bill Gates because that's how it works. Hey, great call, RL. Thanks for calling. RJ, I should say. Thanks for the job you do, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. RJ hung up. I wish I would like to. I could go on and on. Maybe he had enough. I could go on and on. All right, Scotty. It's all yours.
Thank you so much. Oh, look at that. What a great little clock in the window. That's wonderful.
I usually zoom in a little bit on it just so you can see it.
Okay. Oh,
I wrote cool. That. That's my program right
that's
there.
Your programming right there.
Right
that's
there.
Great.
Put that in Racket. That's a Racket program.
That's great. I really like Loquacious' argument or comment here. Teaching everyone to code is like teaching everyone to drive a tractor. Only a few will ever do that. Professionally, I totally agree. There aren't that many that will – I mean, some will become professional programmers, but most won't. However, I would argue that learning programming, even if you don't do it professionally, helps teach thinking skills and logical organization. And things like that. So just like music, I really strongly recommend that everybody take music, even though most of them won't be professional musicians, because it organizes the brain in a certain way that is beneficial to all aspects of life. So that's my argument there. Hey, Mr. Quest, good to see you. Big sports fan. This headphone yesterday, the Beats Solo 3, Mickey's 90th Anniversary Edition. Yeah, okay. Anything with a brand like that, I would look at with some skepticism, but, you know. Knox Harrington said he checked showtimes for Endgame and found both 2D and 3D IMAX showings. I'm not a big fan of IMAX 3D, at least laser IMAX 3D. Now, regular digital IMAX, lamp-based IMAX 3D is better, in my opinion, because it uses polarized glasses, whereas laser 3D uses what's called spectrum separation. And I won't go into the details of it unless somebody really wants it, but the end result is with spectrum separation 3D, I see this kind of milky halo around the picture. And some double imaging when it comes to white, bright text on a dark background. So I really don't like that at all. Polarized 3D doesn't have that problem, although any 3D with 3D glasses reduces the brightness a lot, like more than 50%, maybe 75%. So it's a pretty dim picture. Polarization, Dolby Cinema is better in that regard. Normally, Dolby Cinema movies are played in 2D, but occasionally, once in a while, they do 3D. And when they do, they use spectrum separation as well because it's a laser-based projector. So they have to, and I don't like that. But they're so bright that you still get a brighter image, even though it's got a milky halo that I don't really like. Captain J, is Stan Lee in the new movie? Yes, he is. In fact, and I don't think this is a spoiler to say either, it's his last cameo appearance in a Marvel movie because, of course, he died last year. But he had already recorded his cameos for Captain Marvel and Endgame. So they were able to put those in those movies. And that was a wonderful little moment. It always is. Stan Lee's cameo in Marvel movies is really great. It's always funny. It's, brings a tear to your eye. I mean, this guy is really revered in the whole Comic-Con kind of universe, specifically in Marvel. So, yes, he is in the new movie. KC8RLU Joe is asking me about headphones, and his budget is about $100. So if your budget is $100 and you're looking at the AKG K240 S, I believe, hard to go wrong with that one. That one's been around forever. I don't know if Leo's on the stream here at all, but he's wearing AKGs, I'm pretty sure. And I'm pretty sure they're 240s. It might be certainly an older model maybe than the current one, but in any event. So that's certainly a good way to go. Boy, if you want to switch to in-ears, spend only $30 and get these RevoNext QT5s because, man, oh, man, they sound good. Exactly what I was talking to Leo about before with the Hi-Fi Mans, which are $1,000, they sound very open and you can hear into the mix. But this is these are the comments I said about the RevoNext QT5 when I reviewed them.
I'll show you what I use because a lot of people you mentioned the K240s. These are the Mark IIs, but these are cheap. These used to be $250. They're now $70.
Yeah,
they're really cheap, and I think the nice thing about them, they're super comfortable.
It's that band.
Is that what you're wearing now, Leo?
Yeah, it's the studio headphones I use.
Studio headphones, yeah. So I would say, sure, man.
They're very comfortable. I don't know how perfect the audio is, But used in studios very widely, so it can't be bad.
Very widely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, studios are more concerned with voice than high fidelity music.
True. The real reason I think these are so popular is you can wear them for 12 hours.
Right. Right.
You don't want to wear in-ears for any length of time. And
that's true.
These sit on your head very comfortably. They're over the ear. They're open ears, so you get good bass response. You're wearing the Heils, yeah.
Yeah.
Those are not open ear. Yeah, but they're not open ear. So yeah.
Correct.
Some people prefer one or the other.
Now, there's Sony. Sony makes headphones, and their noise-canceling headphones are really good. But let's see here. I know they still make MDRs. You don't want wireless probably. I'm going to look for Sony MDR headphones because those are also studio, standards. MDR 7506, is certainly, I think I have a pair right here. Let's see here. Wireless deep bass. Now, see, everything's wireless. And, wireless is fine as long as you have a Bluetooth source. But, it's also wireless versus wired. And we can get into a whole discussion about that. Wireless, is it of necessity, by definition, less quality, a lower quality than a wired connection? Depends on what you're listening to, of course, as always, depends on something. But Wired is always going to give you the best possible quality, I think. So the MDR, let's see, MDR 7506, was it? I think that's what it was. If I go MDR 7506, let's see. Those are like $100 on Amazon. So, and Sweetwater. So that is certainly an excellent choice, in my opinion, because I've used them for years and I know them very well. So that would be another one aside from the AKGs.
Scotty, you're a gentleman and a scholar.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it. And we will see you in a week. Yes.
You bet. We sure will.
All right. Have a good one.
Thanks, Leo.
Take care. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones. We got your smartwatches. We got it all. 8888, ask Leo if it's got a chip in it. I'd love to talk to you about it. Your feedback is always appreciated, too. Your tips, your suggestions. It's a user group of the radio, a computer user group on the air. We're all in this together. Trying to use technology that sometimes barely works, trying to figure it all out. 888-827-5536. There's a website that goes along with it, and it's really more, I would say it's a reference site. It's probably the best way to think of it. That's techguylabs.com. We put notes from the show up there every hour, every call, every segment. They're all up there, show by show by show. This is episode 1586, so there's lots of content. In fact, we even put audio, and if there is video, video from the shows. Earlier shows did not have video. All the current shows do, and we put those up on the website too, techguylabs.com. So, you know, if you hear a conversation, you want to know more, or you forgot, you know, you don't want to write down things as you're driving around, so you can go to that site, and everything, all the links, everything will be there, including the links to the books that I put up there that I talked about with RJ. Because we want to, you know, the idea is to make this a resource for you. If you want something more interactive, irc.twit.tv is our chat room. And that's those people are there all the time. Right? Kisco kids here. Right? Yeah. All the time. I left out one book that I think would be a really good book for your computer library, your school library, high school library. It's called The Elements of Computing Systems, Building a Modern Computer from First Principles. And I always thought if I retire and I want to give back a little bit, I would love to teach a high school class based on this book. This is a brilliant book. And they even sell in the back of the book all the pieces you need to do this with a school system, which is, I think, fascinating. The idea is you start with the very most basic principles of logic and or not. And from there, you build up to the point where you actually build a physical computer. And I think it's not exactly teaching programming, but it's teaching so much of the underlying principles of our modern computing devices that I think it's probably necessary for certainly very useful information for computer programmers. It's not just for hardware. It teaches you logic. It teaches you. I just love this book, and it would make such a fantastic. I don't know if it would be a full year course or just a semester course. I don't know enough about it to know. The Elements of Computing Systems. I wonder if anybody listening has taught a class around that. Building a Modern Computer from First Principles. I'm just glad it exists. And you can get the paperback is available on Amazon for $25. For some reason, the hardcover is $455. That's often the case. I don't know if you've noticed this. With these obscure computing books, sometimes they're really expensive online. I don't know why, but I guess they're textbooks maybe. I don't know. But $455? Yeah, no. I guess those are the used ones. Paperback is fine. I know in a library that's a little bit of a challenge. Maybe you can get it bound, get a hardcover put on it. You have any good ideas along those lines? I'd love to hear from you. 8888 Ask Leo. Warren is on the line from Lakewood. Hello, Warren.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Got a weird problem that happened a week and a half ago on my iPhone 6. You've heard of things where you have an email from someone you don't know, don't click the link.
Yep. Or from somebody you know, to be honest. Well, the worst phishing email, we call those phishing, PH, phishing emails, because they're phishing for you and your credentials. And often they're from people you know. But go ahead. Yep. Don't click those links. Right.
Yeah. Well, I got a phone call, and the caller ID on my iPhone was me.
Oh, wow. That's dumb, because you're not going to answer that. You know you're not calling yourself.
I thought, you know, with my wife and my iPhone account pretty much tied together, thought, well, maybe it was her. Answered it.
It wasn't, was it? It was a robocall.
It was a robocall from somebody, Emily from Microsoft. I hung up right away. And here's my question. Is I'm not a bits and bytes type computer person, although I've worked with computers since 1972. I always thought the phone chip, even on smartphones, was separate from the data. But what is the implications of, could somebody hack you through a phone call as opposed to
data? Safe. No, you're safe. It is relatively easy for sophisticated hackers to hack your phone, which is why text message authentication is rapidly being considered unsafe, or certainly a second choice, even though most banks still use it. But that is a different kind of hack. They can't, by calling you, no, they can't do anything. It's interesting they had your number. My God.
I cannot figure that one, and how it dialed myself.
Understand, there's a difference between the number that shows up in caller ID, and then that's just, same with spam email. Doesn't mean that's who it came from. They're spoofing the caller ID, that's all. So they didn't actually call from your number. It just says they called from your number.
Okay.
This is illegal, highly illegal. But those callers that were calling you were probably from Asia, most likely India. He was about to scam you, saying you've got virus on your computer, I'd like to take control, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
You know that. What's illegal? We call it neighbor spoofing. Although you're the first person I've ever heard of who actually had his entire phone number spoofed. Typically, they'll spoof the area code in the first three digits.
Mm-hmm.
And that works well, because if you see a call from your area code and your first three digits, well, it could be the school, it could be your neighbor, you know. So people are much more likely to answer robocalls from that number. But it's obviously not from anybody you know. It's a robocall. It's a marketing call. It is illegal to do neighbor spoofing. Unfortunately, the FCC doesn't seem to want to do much to enforce this. There's been a lot of pressure on them to do something. Congress needs to do something. Robocalls are now more than half of all cell phone calls placed are robocalls.
My blocked call list on my iPhone outnumbers quite a bit my actual contacts.
You want me to give you the bad news? Don't even bother, because they change the phone number all the time.
Yeah, I know. They roll it. I've seen it. I looked at it.
You'll never get another call from that number again.
Yeah.
Although, be interesting, what would happen if you blocked your own number?
Well, I did, actually.
Yeah, nothing, and you were still able to place calls and everything. So that's not a bad idea. There is no case where you're going to get a call from your own number that you would want to answer, so that's a good idea.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't think I didn't think if it was my number that it would even answer.
Yeah, it's really, it's easy to spoof the caller ID system. You know, they've got on their phones hardware that says, this phone call's coming from his number. And so it's trivially easy to spoof. That's why they do it. It's illegal. Doesn't matter. They're out of the country. They're very unlikely to get prosecuted. We got a real problem with robocalls. We really do. And I don't know who to blame, Congress or the FCC, but somebody's got to step up and do something about this. Maybe we blame the carriers. Maybe it's their fault. But this is ridiculous. People can't use their phones for this reason. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take more of your calls right after this. Yeah, so Eric Duckman says maybe if we made caller ID unspoofable, and that's exactly what Shaken and Stirred does. It's an authentication system for it's an authentication system for phone calls. But the problem is, both ends of the phone call have to support it. So T-Mobile has already said we're going to support it. I think AT&T is supporting it. And the idea is one side's using Shaken, one side's using Stir, and they can then verify this is an authenticated caller with this phone number from this carrier. Once it's universal, then the remedy is you just have your phone ignore any unauthenticated calls. But that's honestly, I don't know if that technological solution is sufficient. It's Well, for instance, you might want to say, I block all calls without a caller ID, except that my doctor calls without a caller ID. They're you know, physicians, healthcare workers and people like that often have blocked or turned off caller ID for privacy reasons. So you can't just willy-nilly say, well, I'm not going to take anything that isn't authenticated because you won't get the caller ID. You won't get the no caller ID either. Oh, yeah, it was Comcast T-Mobile. That's right. But who uses Comcast as a service provider? Come on. Does anybody have Xfinity phone? Caller ID doesn't work. Clearly. Really, what you have to do is you have to get robocallers somehow. That's the problem.
I'm a salesman. I have to answer my phone no matter what.
And that's the people who really, yeah. Business people, have to answer the phone because that could be business.
Exactly.
You don't know who's calling. And so that's the worst. That means you're going to answer a half dozen robocalls a day.
I bought a lot of car warranties.
It's horrible. I mean, it really is a mess. I don't, you know, I'm in a good position. I just don't answer calls. Now, one thing I do is I have a Google Voice number with a different, with an area code out of this, out of state area code. So if I see anything with that area code calling me, I know it's not a real call.
Well, the exchange for my work phone is a tiny little nothing.
Yeah, so you can ignore that exchange. Yeah, yeah. I don't know what the solution is because, you know, it's unenforceable really because you're not going to get those Indian robocallers. You can't. You're going to get anybody who uses the U.S., but that's going to be a tiny fraction. I don't know what the solution is. Well, it's basically made phone calls on cell phones useless, right? I guess landlines too, right? It's the same problem.
I'll never have a landline. I'm 35 years old.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I only got a landline for our burglar alarm because we had to have a landline for that. The other day, it was ringing. My wife said, "What's that?" I said, "That's our landline." She said, "We have a landline?" I said, "Yeah." What's the phone number? I don't know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. Our car guy coming up. Sam Abulsamid. He is, this weekend, he's going to be driving, Audi's going to take him on a ride in the new Audi e-tron. Oh, Johnny. Sam's on Sunday? Oh, never mind. Forget I mentioned that. Tune in tomorrow. Johnny Jett, our travel guy. I'm glad I have a staff that knows what's going on. They all came running and said, no, it's Johnny. Johnny Jett, our travel guy. Rewind. Johnny Jett, our travel guy, coming up. Let's take another call. I don't know what day it is. Mark in Santa Ana. Hello, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, I just want to report and have another question. I reset those channels on my, DVR.
Yes.
But I wiped them all out first and then reset them, and that's what made it work.
Perfect. So there was something. So this was an issue of Channel 2 having moved, as channels are going to do over the next few months through the year 20, through a year from now. They're going to move to new frequencies. Now, you don't know TV dials by frequency. They dial by channel number. The channel number will not change, but the frequency will. So the answer is if you lose a channel, as you did channel 2, to rescan, that did not work for you. And so it turned out you had to delete the database and start from scratch. That kind of makes sense, I guess. Good.
Right. I wonder next time I'm just going to delete the one channel and try rescanning.
I bet that would work. Yeah, I bet that would work. It may be, though, I don't know. That's an interesting question. Somebody, after your call, somebody in the chat room said, oh, yeah, this is a known problem with that brand of TV, and here's what you have to do, and I think you figured it out. So, good.
Yeah, but this was NTVR. It's a software that I run on the HPOG.
Oh, that's right. It was the HPOG, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyhow, but I had a question, and by the way, spoiler alert? That came about when VCRs happened because...
Oh, of course!
We were young. You either watched it or you missed it, and there's no point in spoilers. But as soon as VCRs came about, that's when there was the, hey, I didn't have a chance to watch it. Don't spoil it for me.
Yes, of course. VCRs did that. Don't!
Yeah.
Before, we all had to watch everything at the same time. Perfect.
Yep.
Love it.
Yep, and I won't tell you I was a former Girl Scout troop leader, and I won't tell you my awesome spoiler in Endgame, the best part for a former Girl Scout troop leader, but it was awesome.
So that's a meta spoiler. You just did a meta spoiler. It wasn't a spoiler. Yeah. It was information about a spoiler. And I don't, honestly, I know there are people who, when they hear anything, would call it a spoiler. See, now I'm going to be looking for Girl Scouts. But I think that's kind of fun. I don't mind that. Anyway, people got very picky about spoilers in the most recent years. And it really is almost always about kind of geek culture stuff like Marvel comic books or Game of Thrones. I don't know why that is. It's just a geeky thing. Well, thank you for updating us on that fix. I think that this is something that is... not widely known. The FCC's put out bulletins. Nobody reads those. The broadcasters are putting out bulletins. Probably someday your local news will say something like, hey, by the way, tomorrow you won't be able to watch unless you rescan. But that's the issue. Is the FCC is moving most channels, most TV channels, to different frequencies. And so all of a sudden, your frequency match will be wrong.
Yep. So I got an iPad Pro, one of those 12-inchers, at a pawn shop for like $380, which I thought was a pretty good deal.
$380? How old was it?
And so it's a late 2017.
Oh, wow. That's a very good deal. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's why I got it.
That's amazing. Yeah. Is there anything wrong with it?
It's in good condition. No, well, the screen's a little bit scuffed on the sides, but not enough. You know how, like, even if you have a scratch, once you're using it, you can't really see it with the light going through it? So it's just slightly scuffed in a spot. But other than that, the battery seems to hold. I got it last week, and I haven't had to recharge it yet. So, but I had two questions on it. One was the, should I get a pen? Should I not? And also with Keychain. On a Mac, you can just, if you need a password, you can just look it up and type in Keychain. But I can't figure out how to get passwords out of the Keychain off that thing.
So,
and it's impossible.
So... did you say pen?
Yeah, the pen. Can't you get like an Apple pen for those things?
No. Well, it's an iPad?
Yeah, it's an iPad.
Oh, but okay, is it an iPad Pro? Is it an iPad Pro?
Yeah, it's an iPad Pro 12.
Okay. So only the iPad Pros until this most recent release supported pens. They call them pencils. I know what you mean. Stylus. Yeah, they didn't want to use the word stylus.
Okay.
If you were going to ever use it, I have a stylus. I've always had styluses for my iPad Pros, but I'm neither an artist nor a handwriting note taker nor a sketch. You know, so mine just sits there. I don't ever use it because I don't do any of those things. But if you like to draw or you think you might like to draw, that's a good reason to get one. It's great for taking notes or annotating PDFs. If you do any of those things, yes. Otherwise, I wouldn't. Remember, you can always use your finger for like the brute force stuff. You know, if you want to highlight a passage in a PDF, you can use your thumb to do that. That's not. So it's the pencil. The idea of the pencil is it gives you fine. Now, motor skills. Now, you should wipe that iPad. You should not be doing anything with the pass, the keychain, or anything on that thing. Is it not completely freshly wiped? If you buy a used computer and you don't get the install screen, you need to start wipe it, and then because you want to start from scratch, you don't want any of their stuff on it.
I did. It was at the Hello Welcome English.
Perfect.
Pick your language.
So there's nothing in the keychain there. There's nothing there in the keychain.
No, but I've started to because I have, you know, I have a Mac.
Yeah,
I have a laptop. I use keychain, every once in a while.
Keychains are synced. So if you are logged into the same iCloud account as your Mac on the new iPad and you turn on keychain syncing, it's a switch. Once you log into the iCloud account, then there's a bunch of switches for things you can sync, calendar, contacts, mail, and one of them is keychain. If you turn on keychain syncing, nothing more to do. It'll automatically sync up.
But what if I want to look at a password for some reason?
It'll be in. You just open your.
I'm going to.
Oh, so I see what you're saying. It's easy to open the keychain on a Mac. Go to keychain access, and there's all your stuff.
Right.
I don't think they offer that on iPad. Yeah, come to think of it. This is the difference between an iPad and a Mac. In many ways, they hide stuff that you know is there. Keychain's there. A file system is there. You should be able to browse folders and so forth, but you can't. Apple decided to really, not for security as much as simplicity, to hide all that. Now, iOS 13 is coming in, probably September. They'll talk more about it in June. That reputedly is going to add more desktop-like features to the iPad Pros. Perhaps that's one of the features they'll add is keychain access. Otherwise, I don't know of a way to look at your keychain on an iPad. I think it's not available. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I'm wrong. I don't have an iPad to try this with, but Knox Harrington says, if you tap on passwords and accounts and settings, you can... But can you see the passwords? That's what he wants to do, is see them. So if I had an iPad, I could try this. I don't have one in front of me. I don't think there's a way to see them, as there is... Keychain Access will actually let you look at your passwords on a Mac. I don't think you can see them. John's trying it right now.
Passwords, passcode.
Yeah, no, I don't think you can actually see them.
Passwords and accounts.
Yeah.
And autofill passwords. Keychain, I don't...
Yeah. You can turn it on. Oh, wait a minute. Website and app passwords. You can. So that's good. That's good.
Can you see the passwords?
You can't see them, though. Can you?
There may be a way.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm not going to look at your passwords, obviously. So thank you, Knox Harrington. Go to Passwords and Accounts, Website and App Passwords, and then you can see them all. There you go. I was wrong. I really have to, honestly, have to keep an iPad here. That's dumb of me. I should bring my iPad in. Because I have to answer iPad questions. He's been everywhere. He's our travel guy, not our car guy. Our travel guy, Johnny Jett from JohnnyJett.com. Hello, Johnny. Where are you today?
Hello, Leo. I'm in freezing cold Toronto, Canada, where it's 45 degrees.
What? Come home, Johnny. Come home. It's in the 80s here. It's beautiful.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that warm.
We had a heat wave.
Well, not here. Although when I got here a week ago, it was 71 degrees, and then it just dropped. But you know, I'm here with the family, and but we're leaving, getting on a plane, a couple of planes in a couple hours.
Oh, good. Where are you going?
That's a secret.
I knew it was a futile question, but I thought I'd ask anyway.
Yes.
He's a traveling fool. You said you're kind of tired. You've been doing a lot of traveling.
Well, chasing a two-year-old really makes you tired.
Actually, that's much more exhausting. In fact, I'll be honest, when I had little kids, I was looking for any excuse to get out of the house, right?
Yeah, some of my friends are like that, but yeah, you know, I love being with my boys.
You want to be there. You bet. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
we'll
see. That was not a good impulse on my part. The more you spend with your kids, the better. Even though it is exhausting. So I wanted to report back because, you know, I was in Kauai a couple of weeks ago. And you had recommended a couple of apps.
Right. Shaka Guide.
Shaka Guide and the Gypsy Guides. This is a new category of tour apps that I think is the best thing in the world. So before I go somewhere, it's fine that, you know, people do books or they do research. But once you're in the car driving around, and on Kauai, really that's what you do because, you know, you can't, it's big and you can't walk anywhere and there's no mass transit, or not much. So you drive. It's a little hard unless you've got a navigator looking at the guidebook, and that even that's not great, to figure out where you are, what's nearby, what you want to see. So these new, and this is a new category of apps, they are on your phone, and they know where you are because of the phone's GPS, and they can automatically fire up and say, hey, coming up, there's a really great waterfall, take the next left. That's awesome. So right. You recommended a couple for Kauai, the Shaka Guides, which have guides for all of Hawaii, and then these Gypsy Guides, which are not just Hawaii. They're actually, they have many Gypsy Guides.
Right.
And they cost about the same as a travel book. It was $20 for all of, there were four Kauai tours. I bought them all.
Okay.
So we tried the Shaka Guide. Wasn't crazy about the guy's voice. He was kind of a little bit like a DJ, telling you about all the things to see. They're both of them a little too cutesy.
Okay.
The Gypsy Guide, the guy had some sort of fascination with shave ice.
That's me. I have a fascination with shave ice.
Well, I wasn't eating shave ice, but my kid was, and it's exciting. I know, it's the land of shave ice. But every time, oh, and by the way, there's a great shave ice place up ahead. He had a nicer voice. I liked him. And I have to say, you know, we quickly got over the you know, the kind of the cutesy style. I guess they have to do that. But it's so valuable where you're driving along and he says, okay, up ahead, you got a choice to make. If you turn left, we're going to get a chance to go to Waimea Canyon. If you turn right, you'll be going to Poipu Beach. Whichever you do, I've got lots of stories to tell and lots to see. I'll talk to you after you make your choice. So then you go and you turn. Oh, great. I see you're going to Waimea Canyon. And it was really fun. There's a lot of Hawaiian history they put in because there's periods of time when nothing's going on. They give you a fairly good sized warning, like, okay, watch out. There's a road sign on the left. It's very up to date. You're gonna, when you see that road sign, get ready because there's a right hand turn. It's gonna be a dirt road. There's give you lots of information, and then they tell you a lot about what you might see. There's gonna be a great, you know, shaky bridge coming up on the left. If you want to see it, just take that turn. I thought this is a revolution in areas where you're going to be driving around to see sights. It's like having a guy in the back seat saying, for hey, sure. This is who really knows the area. So we ended up loving the Gypsy Guides. I didn't spend a lot of time with the Shaka Guide because I didn't like the style as much. The other thing I liked about the Gypsy Guide is you could pick up anywhere. So you just, wherever you are, you turn it on and you're going to get the information. The Shaka guy wanted you to go to the beginning of the tour to take the tour.
And I didn't find that. That's annoying.
Yeah. I just wanted to say, wherever I am, what should I do? So I highly recommend these. They have them for all over for, I think, Yellowstone. And I think this is a really, really good idea to.
It is. Actually, Rick Steves does them for Europe.
Oh, I love Rick Steves. If he does them for Europe, I'm getting them.
So, and I think the ones on Rick Steves are free, his guides. Yeah, so he just wants you to buy the guidebook or his tours because that's where he makes a lot of
money. Well, his stuff is amazing, and I love Rick Steves. So.
I speak a lot of different conferences with him.
Oh, give him.
I mean, he has like, he's got, you know, he has a cult following.
Oh, I'm one of his cultists because he has a nice way about him, and he really loves travel in a deep way. It's really kind of neat.
Right.
Anyway, this is a new category. I love it. Anywhere I'm going, I'm going to bring these with us because this is the kind of thing, especially if you're driving your own car, but even if you were on a bus or something, this would work, you know, it's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great way to get knowledge about the place and, you know, pass time. And
I think Google was the first to do this. They had an app, a tour guide app, and I don't know if they still make it. You know how it is with Google. They kill stuff right and left, but they had a great, tour guide app that would do exactly the same thing. And, you know, I tried it in Petaluma. There's only three things to see.
I'm saying, with your voice, you should be doing these tours.
I would love to. I think this is so much fun. But obviously, there's a lot of work that goes into this. They've really got to know the area. And if it's done right, it's as good as any real guidebook. And the guy acts like he's a local, which I would
assume they hire a local.
Yeah, I mean they should. I don't know. Anyway,
but you never know.
So that's usually it's your recommendation. And this is something you had recommended before, and I just wanted to give you some feedback. Love it, and yeah, anytime I go anywhere from now on, I'm going to see if there's such a thing, a tour book or something. Yeah.
Yeah, I think actually most guidebooks these days are going to start coming out with that version. It makes sense.
It's perfect. And if you rent a car, as we did with Apple's car audio or Google's Android Auto or CarPlay, it's great because you just hook the phone up. It's charging it. It's hooked up to the thing. You hear the audio through the car speakers. I mean, it would work with Bluetooth too, but it just was a very easy way to do it. I loved it.
Good.
What do you have for me?
So, you know, everyone's talking about the film that just came out this week. And I heard just on your segments before, you know, the spoiler alerts.
Yes.
Well, so this app's been around since 2005, but because of this movie, so many people want to see it. It's called Run P. Have you talked about this?
Yes. You need it for this. It's 3 hours long.
It's a 3 hour long movie. And so Run P is an app and a website where they tell you the best times to take a pee break. And, you know, it's actually for movies that are 3 months older, it's free. If you want to get something new, like the Avengers, you have to pay one Run P, they call it, and it's 99 cents for 10 of them.
Oh, well, that's not bad. It's 10
cents.
It's
really cheap, right?
And the idea is, it tells you when in the movie it's safe to go take a bathroom break,
and it gives you it vibrates your phone so you don't disturb other people. Then when you're in the bathroom, you can actually read what you're missing.
Oh, I love it.
And then you can run back. And, someone wrote about it this week because of the movie, and it just crashed their servers. But it's available in like 20 different languages. So, everyone's talking about it. I looked it up for some of the movies that are, 3 months and older, and it was, spot on. And they give you a great little synopsis. And they also tell you if you should stick around for the very end for the extra credits, if there are any.
Yes. In this case, there aren't, apparently.
Right, for this movie, but there's so many different ones. And also, if you don't want to spend any money, there is a way to watch three videos. Every time you watch a video, if you watch three videos.
Yeah, you can watch ads, basically. Johnny Jett, he's our travel guy. I really appreciate it. JohnnyJett.com. Follow him on Instagram and Twitter. And come back here next week. We'll have more tips. Safe travels, Johnny.
Thank you. You too.
I ain't going anywhere.
Been safe driving.
Yes, that's true. We need that. Awesome. Thank you, John.
All right. So have you talked about Run P on any of your...
Oh, yeah. When it came out, I think we probably...
It's been around.
Oh, it's been around forever. Wow. Yeah. No,
but it's
a good app to have. Yeah. I didn't get to your site. I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's okay. I don't apologize. It's actually just as well.
You can use it for next time.
Exactly. I'm always looking to bank them.
Saves you some time.
I'll take a week off.
Good. I'm sorry you're tired. Don't get sick.
No. Yeah, let's hope not.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, I hope you have a great week. And
you too. Love to Natalie and Jack.
Same to Lisa. And hopefully we'll see you soon.
I know. I hope so too.
Thanks, all right, John. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. Line one, we go to Indianapolis. Jason's on the line. Hey, Jason.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
Good. Long-time listener, first-time caller, and long-time listener of your Security Now podcast as well. So I want to thank you for everything you do.
That is a very popular show. I guess it has something to do with the fact that there's so much insecurity in technology these days. Steve Gibson, our host.
Well.
Yeah. That's a great show. Twit.tv is our podcast network. Twit.tv/SN for Security Now. But you got to be a geek to listen to that. You must be a geek.
Yeah, I am. Unfortunately, I admit it. So, hey, I have a question about my phone. I have a Samsung Galaxy Note 8. And I upgraded to Android 9.0 about 2 weeks ago. Oh. The phone is on Verizon.
Yep.
And it pushed through the update.
Yep.
And ever since then, only when I'm on a call the screen will get bright and then it'll get dim and then it'll go like completely dark and then it'll come back on.
That's annoying. Now you're not holding it to your face, are you? Are you looking at it? Obviously to see it, you must be.
I'm looking at it, but I'm using a Bluetooth headset.
Okay.
So I'm not holding it up to my face.
Yeah, I mean, one cause for this could be there is, of course, a light sensor in that. And if you were holding it to your cheek, that's exactly what would happen. It would go, oh, it got dark in here, and it would get very bright. But if you're not doing that, and you're not putting your thumb over the light sensor, maybe it's the way you're holding it.
I don't know. I just got it, like, laying flat down on a table, whatnot.
But oh, you're not holding it at all then.
No, not at all. Yeah, I just have it laying flat down on the table. And I had looked at some YouTube videos about the proximity sensor. I think that's the light sensor you're referring to.
Yes.
There was a setting in there where you could calibrate it. But I believe that was on, like, the Android 8.0. And I didn't know if they made some changes because I didn't see a setting where I could calibrate the sensor. So I didn't know if I had just kind of a one in a million phone that just doesn't like the Android 9.0 update, or if you had heard of this.
I have not heard of it. It would be worth a little search around xdadevelopers.com or Reddit to see if anybody else with that phone is having that problem. I'm going to guess it does have something. That sounds like exactly what the proximity sensor would do. It operates all the time, even in a dark room. That's, you know, you can, in fact, one thing you could look at is slide down the notification tray and look at the slider for brightness and see if it's moving around. If one thing to try is turn off auto brightness and see if that stops it. Because
okay,
what's happening, of course, is, I don't know if this is what's causing it, but the idea is if you're in bright daylight, it'll slide it all the way to the right to brighten the screen as much as possible so you can see it in bright daylight. But if you're it's at night and the room's dark, it goes all the way to the left because it doesn't want to blind you. And that usually is set to auto. Turn off auto, see if that stops it. And it could be that there is an issue with your proximity sensor, in which case, you know, Samsung might want to fix that.
Thank goodness for the warranty.
Yeah. It's a great phone, and I'm really thrilled to hear that they're getting Android 9 on these phones because they're a year old, and it's good on Verizon for pushing it out, too, because it has to get through. The carrier has to approve it as well.
Yeah, I was surprised myself that they had, you know, pushed it out to it being, you know, with the age of the phone and whatnot. So I was happy to get it until this started up.
Yeah. Gosh, I don't know off the top of my head. I haven't heard of that problem, but those are the places to look: proximity sensor and auto brightness, because that sounds like something's going on there.
Okay, Leo. Well, hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking my call and everything you do.
I got a podcast tip for you because Boss Hogg is in studio. He's the boss of the Liberty Podcast, which is out of a fictional town called Pawnee, Indiana, but it's all about small town politics in Newcastle, Indiana, which is really a cool idea. I think this is a great idea, local podcast. So maybe I know you're from the big city, but if you ever get out into hog country,
you know what's funny is I actually drive past Newcastle every day on Interstate 70. I'm a truck driver, so I go past there every day.
I bet you'd enjoy the Liberty Podcast. Give it a try.
I will. Thank you for the tip, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, and Boss Hogg thanks you. Named after the corrupt politician from Dukes of Hazzard, of course. Yeah. I'm going to get those boys and I'm going to throw them in jail. Dave, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I'm like many other people. I have an old 2009 Mac Pro. I used to do a lot of editing with Pro Tools and Final Cut 7. And I've been patiently waiting for more information from Apple on when the new Mac Pro is going to be released. I never bought the butt can, you know.
Thank God. You already saved yourself a lot of heartache. I bought the trash can, the black one, in 2013 when it came out, and they never updated it. 6 years later, never updated it.
The
thing now is a $3,000 doorstop. So you're, I wish they'd go back to their original Mac Pro design. There was nothing wrong with it. This is an example of design over function, where they said, but we can make it look so cool. And yet the original Mac Pro, what we call the cheese grater Mac, was super functional. Yeah. You slide drives in and out. You could add up to six drives. It was so easy to get to. It was well designed and very expandable. They abandoned that for the...
They should have learned the first time, you know. They had the toaster, I think, there for a while, and that one failed miserably.
Yeah.
But, you know, I almost bit on the new Mac Mini, and it's got basically everything I need.
It's
but
pretty close.
I'm reading plus and minuses about the capability of the video card. I'm just not sure.
Well, and, of course, Apple's trying to sell you external graphics cards, eGPUs, from Blackmagic.
Right.
Those are very expensive. I bought one.
Yeah.
It definitely speeds things up. Those Mac Minis are great. What you get in a Mac Pro, there's a few things that I would say make a Mac Pro a Mac Pro. One is the choice of processor, and you want a Xeon processor that has many cores and many threads. And that's because pros, say video editors, which you are often using software like Final Cut, which you use, that uses all those cores. And that really saves rendering time and transcoding time. It makes a big difference. So that's one thing. You're looking for an ability to put 64 gigs of RAM in there, as much RAM as possible. And I think the Mini has a very good expandability in that regard. You're also looking for fast drives. Now, with the Mini, it has internal drives, but you're going to use external Thunderbolt 3 drives. And Thunderbolt 3 is fast enough to support 4K, even, I suppose, 8K, if you ever get to it, video editing. So you've got a pretty good tool chain for video editing there. When's the new Mac Pro coming out? No one knows. Apple said this year. I think you could reasonably wait till June, WWDC. The Worldwide Developers Conference.
Yep.
If they're going to do a Pro this year, and I think they are, they will absolutely say something about it June 7th. Now, if they don't say anything, get a Mac Mini. Or one of the new iMac Pros. Those are also very high-end. Problem with the iMac Pro is as an existing screen. And, you know, it makes sense for a Pro to have an external screen that's not part of the system.
Right. My workflow, I'm just locked into dual size, dual monitors.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of
you don't need a Mini. I have a three monitor setup with my Mac, iMac in the middle, and then two cinema displays on left and right. That would work fine for video editing. But you're a little constrained because you have to use the iMac screen as one of the three.
Yeah, I know. And it kind of sets everything. I have my monitors placed where the split between the two screens right at my nose.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So it's a real comfortable way to work. Do you have any idea at all what this beast is going to cost? I mean,
idea.
If the iMac Pro is going to be $7,000, then I won't entertain it, you know?
Well, the iMac Pro starts at $5,000.
Yeah.
That's going to give you a benchmark. Remember, that includes a very expensive, nice screen. So maybe you could take $1,000 off for that. So I would guess that a Mac Pro, a screenless Mac Pro, would start at $4,000. But, you know, you can get the iMac Pro up to $10,000. Actually, $12,000, I think, is the max, if you really max it out. So you can get it to be pretty expensive. But that's going to be up to you how much RAM, how much hard drive, how much processor you want.
Well, I'm sure that's going to happen with the Mac Pro. They're going to sell the base model at the $4,000, and then by the time you up the RAM, the drive, you name it, it's going to be $6,000.
My guess is you nailed it. It'll be $4,000, but that's a complete guess. No one knows anything, and Apple's last announcements about the Mac Pro were more than a year ago, so who knows? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I think the Mac Mini is surprisingly good, surprisingly capable. I wouldn't hesitate to get the Mac Mini, to be honest with you. Hey, our show today brought to you by SimpliSafe. I know you want to protect your family, your home, from the bad guys out there. You know, when you got a sign in front that says protected by SimpliSafe, the bad guys just going to move on. They're going to go down the street to the house that doesn't have that sign. There's no reason to fear getting robbed, because SimpliSafe is easy, affordable. It's home security that knows it feels good to fear less. They have award-winning 24/7 protection. Protects your home through blizzards, blackouts. Even if the bad guys decide, well, let's take a chance. Let's hit this house. And they see the Simply Safe sitting on the desk there, or the keypad on the wall, and they take a bat to it. It's still going to work. It's still going to call for help. And their monitoring is the least expensive. And by the way, no contract, month to month. Simply Safe wins awards all the time. The Verge says it's the best home security. PC Magazine, Reader's Choice Award. Two-time winner of CNET's Editor's Choice Award. Top pick at the Wire Cutter. And I like it. In fact, it's the home security I get for friends, kids, when they move into their first apartment. It's great for renters, too, because you can install all the Simply Safe sensors, and they've got every sensor you could possibly need, and put it up there without drilling into the wall or anything. You get the motion sensors, the door sensors. You even have water pipe break sensors, carbon monoxide sensors, very important. Put all of those in, set up the base station, and then if you move, you just take it all down, set it up in the next place. It's brilliant. No contract, no hidden fees, no gotchas. Their prices are always fair and honest. Here, find out. If you go right now, you'll get free shipping and a 60-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk at all, and you'll have your home protected within a week. And no guy coming in traipsing around the house saying, well, let me see where I put this. You do it yourself. It's easy. Go to simplysafe.com/twit. You'll get started today. S-I-M-P-L-I, Simply Safe. SAFE.com/twit. It's home security I trust my family with. You can do the same. And there's no risk. SimplySafe.com/twit. We thank him so much for supporting our Tech Guy podcast. And I thank you for supporting the Tech Guy podcast by using that special address, SimplySafe.com/twit. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Good to see you. Leo Laporte here. The Tech Guy, time to talk, computers, the internet. We got your home theater. We got your digital photography. We've got your smartphones. We got your smart watches. We got your augmented reality, your virtual reality. We got your real reality. Anything with a chip in it. If you want to talk about this stuff that's changing our world, I'm here for you. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. The website that goes with the show is techguylabs.com. If you go there, everything we talk about, we put in there. James Revo's writing it all down so that you don't have to write it down yourself. You can just go refer to it. There's also phone numbers there, link to our great chat room at irc.twit.tv, all sorts of stuff, even audio and video of the shows after the fact. In fact, we do a podcast of the show. I know your local station may as well, and of course I encourage you to listen to theirs, but we have one as well in our Twit Network, Podcast of the Tech Guy, along with a couple of dozen other shows, TWIT.TV, for the full list. TWIT stands for This Week in Tech, TWIT.TV. Richard in North Hills, California. Hello, Richard.
Well, good morning, Leo. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Excellent. Listen, I'm in the market for a low-priced laptop between $300 and $500. And I've been to the different stores, and they show me, in that range, they show me HPs and other brands, that the old technology, maybe 1 terabyte hard drive, versus the newer technology, the so-called solid state, of 128 gigabytes. And
it does seem like a big difference, doesn't it?
Well, that's right. But they keep arguing that the 128 gigabytes is better because it's faster. I said, yeah, but it's smaller. I don't get it. What's your advice on that choice?
Well, SSDs are generally much faster than spinning drives. And because they have no moving parts, I think they're more reliable in the long run than spinning drives. But yeah. You nailed it. The cost per this, what it really comes down to is the cost per gigabyte of storage. The cost for gigabyte on spinning drives is so much lower that for the same price, and you're buying a budget computer, a very low price computer, so it's very price sensitive, they can put a much bigger drive in. It's $70 or $80 for a terabyte spinning drive.
Right.
It's probably 2 times or 3 times that for a terabyte SSD. To save even more money, though, and this is the thing to look at, sometimes they don't use an SSD. They use eMMC memory, which isn't, in fact, super fast. It's the kind of memory that's in most phones, camera memory, that kind of thing. It's not super fast. So if they're saying it's a genuine SSD, well, that's going to be, the boot times are going to be faster, the load times are going to be faster. What you have to ask yourself is, how much data do I want to store on that drive?
Well, my point is, when I look at my existing laptop, which is about 6 or 8 years old, I'm using about 200 gigabytes.
Yeah, so that won't be enough, will it?
No,
Windows itself can live in 32 gigabytes. It's not, you know, the operating system. But then you add apps, and if you store photos or movies or anything on there, it's going to start to fill up pretty quickly. Most people with some discipline can survive with a smaller drive because they just say, well, I'm not going to put my photos there, and I'm not going to store my videos there. I'm not going to try to put my entire music library on this computer. You have to you have to make that decision for yourself, though. Those 128 drives are getting scarcer than hen's teeth.
Okay.
In most cases, you're going to see 256.
Okay.
Which would be enough for, well, it would be the same as you're currently using.
Right, right.
I mean, it's up to you.
They keep trying to scare me into thinking that the old technology, the 1 terabyte, is subject to, if I drop the computer and so on, it's going to malfunction. Well, I've had this existing one, like I said, for 6 or 8 years, and I've had no problems with it. So should I think that it's somehow very...
It's not different. They're feeding you horse pucky.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same. In fact, maybe even better these days.
Okay.
So you have to decide which is more important, mass storage or speed. And this is always the case in computers, but much more so when you get to the low end. You're making trade-offs. In order to save money, there's going to be places where they save. And that might be one of them. The other thing they probably do in there is they put a slower spinning drive, a 5,400 RPM drive instead of a faster one.
Okay.
Again, those are cheaper, and they're even slower.
Very good.
You may not mind. You may say, well, that's the same speed as what I've got. I'm happy with what I got. Some people are in more of a hurry than others. A lot. Honestly, some of it's just type A personalities. It's just, I don't want to wait. It's got to boot in 3 seconds or I'm not happy. And sometimes it's, well, I'm doing work that needs a lot of speed. If you're a video editor, for instance, you don't want to be waiting on the hard drive. You could be waiting a long time. So, if you're a computer programmer, it could be the difference between going to get a cup of coffee and going out to lunch. That can make a big difference. So you're going to be making trade-offs. It's a low-end computer. That means will be significant trade-offs. You have to really think about what's important to you. For instance, you're going to have a smaller screen, lower quality screen on a less expensive computer. The keyboard and trackpad may not be as good as on a more expensive computer. You have to decide what you care about. If you care about input and output, you might have to spend more money. So think about how you use it. You did the right thing. You said, well, how much drive space have I used on my old computer? And that told you right away, if I want to use this computer the same way I use my old computer, I better get a bigger drive. Inquire to see. They don't always. Usually at the low end, they're going to give you several different builds, and that's it. As you get to higher-end computers, you can do what they call build to order. You can say, well, I want this, and I want this, and I want this, and you can make it maybe, customize it a little bit more to your needs. But see if they have a 256-gig drive. That might be a good compromise. It won't be twice as much. Shouldn't be twice as much. I've talked before about the new laptop I got. I got a Windows laptop because I decided not to wait for Apple to figure out how to get a keyboard to work. So I bought a ThinkPad, which, of course, still have probably the best keyboards in any laptop. And I bought Lenovo's just started shipping an X1, which is their kind of high-end performance laptops. They just shipped one called the Extreme. And one of the reasons I liked it is because I can put not one but 2 SSDs in there. I got it with a smaller SSD, a 256-gig SSD, and a larger one, a terabyte. And then I realized, well, I want to put 2 operating systems on here. So I bought and for $170, I was able to get another terabyte SSD to replace the one that it came with. They're getting much cheaper than they used to be. They really are. And it was a Western Digital Black, very nice, fast SSD, so I was very happy. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Line four, Robert in Stevensville, Montana. Hello, Robert.
Good day, Leo.
Good day to you, sir. What can I do for you?
Well, I use Google Chrome as my default browser.
Mm-hmm.
When I click on the bookmarks bar,
yeah,
there are hundreds and hundreds of copies of Facebook ad preferences.
Oh, isn't that great?
I love it.
I don't know how they're getting there.
I don't either.
Have you gone into the bookmark manager? That's the easiest way to clean that all up.
You can clean them up. They just reappear.
But they're coming back.
Yeah.
So in Chrome, you add a bookmark by pressing, depending on the platform you are, either Shift-D or on Windows, Control-D.
Right, or the star in the corner or whatever.
Yeah, or click on that star. Yeah, but I'm wondering maybe if you're accidentally hitting Control D on the ad preferences. Why would those keep coming up?
I'd be on me. They'd been on there for a long time. I quit worrying about it a long time ago, but can't really use my bookmarks.
Yeah, that ruins it. is anybody else using your computer?
No, this is on every machine I own.
Yeah, well, that would be the case if you're syncing your Chrome to all through your Chrome,
yep,
your Google account.
They are.
That's one of the reasons it's great, but you could turn that off and then delete it on those individual ones and see if it comes back. I wonder if there's one machine that's somehow...
Yeah, that's a pertinent question.
Yeah, doing that. So you've gone in there and deleted them all, and then do they come back like one by one, or they come back en masse?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to.
I would guess that the critical problem is that even if you turn it off on one machine, it's then going to sync with the other machines where they still exist, and it's going to go blast and bite right back. And that's how you would know that that's coming from syncing. So if you delete them all, and then you wait a minute, and they all go boom, they come back all at once, it's because you're syncing. So right, turn off sync on all of your computers.
Just log out of the...
Well, you don't have to log out. You could turn it off. You can also say, let me see. I'm looking at the Chrome help page about bookmark syncing at support.google.com.
Right.
And I'm just seeing if there's a way to say don't sync. I guess you just turn it off. Turn it off on all the machines. Delete all those Facebooks on one machine.
Right.
Without sync and see if it comes back. If it doesn't, so actually what you could do is just go find one machine, turn off sync, delete them on that one. And if they don't come back, good. You know, I don't know how they got there in the first place. That's, you know, maybe there's a JavaScript that was doing that, or something weird was doing that.
Something, if maybe logging out of Facebook entirely on every machine.
No. Chrome has to make those bookmarks. Facebook can't do it, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know. They do a lot of things.
Yeah, they do. They do. I was really glad to see that New York State was going to go investigate what Facebook did. We found out about last week that was the most infuriating thing they've done yet, and that's saying a lot. Facebook was asking some users, we don't know how many, to authenticate when they sign up for their account by giving Facebook their email password. Now, we've all encountered websites that say, well, okay, I want to verify that that's your email address, so I'm going to send an email to that email address. You click that link in your email, and then we'll know you're really at that address. That's normal. Facebook was saying, let us log in. We'll do it for you. And then what they were doing without telling you is logging into your email and downloading all your contacts.
Oh, yeah.
Facebook admits they did this for at least 1.6 million users. I'm not sure why those 1.6 were so special, but that is such a breach. First of all, obviously, if a website asks you for a password to your email account, say no. But a lot of people use Facebook who are not, you know, thinking about security. They assume they're going to be taken care of. They should be able to assume that. And they just said, well, okay, you need my password. Here it is. Monkey123.
I would never do that.
But. No, you're smart enough. You would never do that. But that's appalling that they even tried. Facebook said it was an programming error. Well, excuse me, but that's a pretty big program. You got a right to do that. That's not a mistake. Sir. That's intentional. And somebody at Facebook approved it. Anyway, I'm sorry. You got me off on a tangent.
Yeah, okay.
But you were right. Facebook does things. You never know. But as far as I know, I don't think a site can just make a bookmark without asking you. I'm almost Chrome would never allow that. That's a big deal. So, but who knows what happened, you know? Maybe there were repeated control Ds, then it got in your bookmarks, and then it syncs to everywhere, and now when you try to delete it, it syncs back. So my first suggestion is turn off sync in Chrome, delete it, and then just sit and wait and see if they come back. If they don't, hallelujah. Now you have a couple of choices. Sync should know that if you delete it on one, to delete it on the others, but doesn't always. It might think, oh, he deleted it by mistake. I'm going to sync these. So what you could do, and all browsers, including Chrome, allow this, is once you get your bookmarks looking the way you want, export them. And it'll export into an HTML file, which you can then import on all the other machines. So you can clean up the bookmarks, get it the way you want, and now you can overwrite the bookmarks everywhere with this. And it's not a big file, a little HTML file.
Correct. Yeah, that makes sense.
Somebody, Dr. Mom says, if you ever sign into Chrome on a public computer, maybe that happened. Or maybe you synced your Chrome bookmarks with a kid. Or, I mean, who knows, right? That's a weird thing to have happen. I hope you solve it. If that works, let me know, because I'd be curious.
Okay.
Hey, I appreciate it. Nice to talk to you.
Leo.
Thanks for listening in Stevensville. Keep listening, Robert.
Amen.
Take care. Right. Bye-bye, brother. 8888 Ask Leo. That's a weird one, isn't it? And I'm so mad at Facebook. I just feel like they have breached trust so often, so consistently, that you have to start to wonder, are these actually, you know, like bad people? I mean, I was giving them the benefit of the doubt for a few years. Their motto used to be move fast and break things. The idea is, you know, if you want to change the world, you gotta move fast. And if something breaks, you fix it later, afterwards. But there's no way they should be. They've got to be punished for this. They announced in their quarterly results this week, and of course they made a ton of money, that they're going to set aside $3 billion for a fine they anticipate from the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, could be as high as $5 billion. But to a company like Facebook, I mean, it's a serious fine, don't get me wrong. You know, $3 billion, that's a significant amount of money. But it doesn't really hurt the way, say, $30 billion would. I don't know what the limits are on how much they can fine them, but whatever it is, it's not enough. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I just want to walk around all the time with the average white band behind me. Wouldn't that be cool? Like you're just like your theme band. Especially that guitar going ding, 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 ding. Ladies and gentlemen, you know him as the tech guy, Mr. Leo Laporte. Wouldn't that be cool? 88, maybe the first time anyway. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. And back to the phones we go. Linda in Culver City, California. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Well, I'm not very computer savvy, but here's my situation. I was having a hardware problem with my mouse cursor sticking intermittently on my MacBook Pro. So I went to the repair shop. And the tech looked at my machine, my MacBook Pro, and asked me why I was still running El Capitan. And I just kind of looked at him. I said, I don't know, but if I need to upgrade, I will. And he said, well, it's too late. You can't upgrade now.
What?
But we can upgrade.
Was this an Apple store you took it to?
No, just an independent repair place.
And then what did he say?
He said, but we can upgrade it for you.
For a price.
Well, I didn't even get that far because my initial problem was the cursor.
Yeah.
So he said, go ahead. He said, it's probably a hardware problem. Bring it back in. We'll keep it for a couple of days, blah, blah, blah. He said probably $99 for whatever.
Well, that's not bad.
And $99 for their service. Not bad. In the meantime, he said, take it home for the weekend and go buy a mouse to plug into your computer.
That's the advice I would have given you for free.
And that's what he did. He did that for free. And I went and bought, you know, a $20.
He didn't have a mouse lying around he could just plug in?
No. Anyway, it worked fine. And I plugged it in for about 3 hours. I've now unplugged it, and my mouse cursor on the Mac Pro is working just fine. So it's an intermittent problem.
Yeah.
My biggest question, though, is about upgrading to a newer operating system.
Well, first let me help you with the mouse. So you did exactly the right diagnostic thing, which is to see if there is a problem in general with mousing. There isn't. So it's probably your trackpad. It could be schmutz on your trackpad. So sometimes trackpad, and it could be just stray, you know, stuff going on in the trackpad. Sometimes the trackpad will stop. It sounds like it's not moving. I would keep the mouse plugged in, and the next time that happens, and you can't move it with the trackpad, see if you can move it with the mouse.
Okay, and that's what I did yesterday, and it worked with the mouse fine.
Even though you couldn't move it with the trackpad.
Yes.
Okay, so now we know it's a trackpad, and you know it's not an expense. If he says he can fix it, I would let him. Personally, if you have an Apple store nearby, I would bring it to them instead.
Okay.
Because they're not going to say the dopey thing, which is it's too late. You waited too long to upgrade it, because that's not true. So if you want to upgrade, El Capitan is late enough that you have the App Store. Go to the App Store and search for Mojave, which is the latest version.
Mojave, okay.
And you should be able to just download Mojave and install it. If it says, no, you have to install Yosemite first. It might. Sometimes that happens. You're only two behind. You're not way far behind.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If it says that, whatever it says, it'll walk you through that process. But I think from El Capitan, it's no problem just to go right to Mojave.
All right.
Actually, you may not even be two behind. You might only be one behind. So go to the App Store and look for Mojave and just run that.
And just go to the Apple App Store?
Yeah. It's under the Apple on the menu up on the left there.
Yeah.
App Store. And just search for Mojave. That's the latest version.
Okay.
And how old is the machine? Did it come with El Capitan?
I'm fine with it. It's about 4, 5
years. Yeah. So I mean, it is conceivable. It has nothing to do with you waiting or not waiting. Some older machines are limited to how far they can go.
Uh-huh.
So if your machine can't go to Mojave, High Sierra, or Sierra, it may be, in fact, El Capitan's the latest version that you can't upgrade. But you'll know immediately. If 4 years ago, I think you should be. I'm pretty sure you can get all the way up to Mojave.
Okay. All right. I'll certainly look into that. And then I have a quick question about backup. I've used Carbonite for years. It was like $99 a year. And I just got an email like, oh, we renewed you for the next year. And it's like $135 or $137. It's really gone up in price. When you have an Apple, do you automatically get the cloud as backup?
You do, but Apple charges more for the iCloud, and it's different from Carbonite. So Carbonite's designed to back up everything, basically all your data. iCloud only backs up the iCloud folder. So that's not unless you put everything you want to save in the iCloud folder, it's also not economical. They give you 5 gigs to start, but it's relatively economical. But there are other the idea, Carbonite is cloud storage specifically for backup. But any cloud storage can be used for backup, absolutely. Dropbox, Google Drive. Google Drive's pretty cheap. I think it's cheaper than any of them. And all of them can be set up to back up what you care about. So, yeah, I mean, you don't need Carbonite. $139 a year. For $99 a year, you can get 2 terabytes of storage from Google.
Okay.
The thing is, then you have to, it's a little different. Then you have to configure. Google has a backup and sync program that you have to install. You have to tell it what you want to backup and sync manually and so forth. So it's a competitive market. That's one of the reasons Carbonite's moving from the consumer market and starting to focus more on the business market, is that it's a hard market to do well in, because there are lots of people who are willing to cut the price to almost nothing.
Okay. thank you for the help, and I hope to upgrade my system in the next week or so.
Yeah, if it's only 2015, you can go all the way up to Mojave. If it's older than that, you may be El Capitan may in fact be the oldest, the latest version you get. But don't fear that; that's not a bad thing.
Okay.
If it's doing what you want it to do, that's fine.
Okay. Yeah, it's doing everything we need.
Yeah,
to do.
If you're happy with it, that's fine. I suspect that's the case, because generally Apple will tell you, okay, it's time to upgrade to Sierra. Okay, it's time to upgrade to High Sierra. Okay, it's time to upgrade. So if you haven't been seeing that, it may be you're at the last version. There's a reason El Capitan rings a bell in my mind. That's the, for many older Macs, 2009 Macs, for instance, that's the most recent operating system you can use. That's pretty, that pretty much is the case with Windows as well and all operating systems. In general, after a period of time, they just stop supporting it. Doesn't mean it's bad. Doesn't mean Windows XP won't continue to work. It just means you're not going to get any security patches. And I think for a lot of people, that's an issue, right? They want something a little more secure. 8888 asks, Lee, I'm just looking at the chat room. James DeRuvo, who does our show notes, says he has a 2012 Mac, which we upgraded. He says it slowed me down. I don't think if you, she said it was 4 years old, 2015. By the way, that was the last good MacBook. The MacBook Pro 2015 had the last good keyboard that Apple ever made. So it's worth keeping it going. I used a 2015 for the longest time. And I would, if you're going to need to replace the trackpad, I would get Apple to do it. It may not be as inexpensive, but it won't be a hugely more expensive, and I think they'll do a better job. And you'll be getting a genuine Apple part. Apple doesn't really offer parts to other people. They want to keep it all to themselves. Guess who's coming up just around the corner? It's Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. Our gizmo wizard, we call him the Giz Wiz for short. He'll have a crazy gizmo or gadget to share with us. And I think if we have time, we'll take a few more calls too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Don't forget the website. Everything's there. We put it there at techguylabs.com. And there's no charge. Oh, hey, let me tell you about LastPass, our last ad of the day. LastPass is the number one most preferred password manager. It is the password manager, as far as I'm concerned. I've been using it since they started. And in fact, we use it so heavily. I use it so heavily. I asked Steve Gibson to look at it. He interviewed Joe Segrist, the creator. Joe was very kindly shared all the source code with Steve. Steve Gibson, our security guy, he approved. And not only did he approve, he's a LastPass customer. We use it now at Twit, too, LastPass Enterprise for our business. You don't want to be the next business with a data breach, especially if you have customer information. You need to keep your information private, secure, and hidden. You need LastPass. You know, in some ways, your employee is the number one weak point in your security, right? Because employees, we know, they share passwords, and not just with people who work with them. They put passwords on Post-it notes on the screen. They write them down. They practically tweet them. So with LastPass, for enterprise, our employees sometimes, like for instance, our controller doesn't even know the passwords to our bank account and to our books, because all she does is click the link in LastPass, it opens it up, logs her in, which means if we change the password, she gets that automatically. All she sees is dots. With LastPass Enterprise, you don't have to worry about bad password hygiene. You can secure every password-protected entry point to your business, full administration oversight with over 100 policies. For instance, we enforce certain rules for their password to the LastPass account. You know, they have to have a certain length, and they have to have numbers and lowercase and symbols. You can do that. You can have policies for your LastPass password. We also require two-factor authentication. You don't have to, but it's nice to do that. You get actionable security reports. You know who's using LastPass when. You can automate user management. You can control shared access. You can move to the cloud with everything and know it's still secure. And I love the folders because it means it's easy for our ops department to have all the passwords they need in one easy place. If you're doing two-factor, look at LastPass Authenticator. It's a unique one-tap password verification process. Of course, two-factor authentication we know is really good. But instead of entering six digits, Our employees love it. They put the authenticator in their phone and it says, did you just try to log in? Yes. Approve. Awesome. And it's free. LastPass Teams, if you have a smaller business, 50 or fewer people, LastPass Premium for personal use. I use LastPass Families at home with Lisa. That way we can keep all our family passwords organized, secure, and shared. Medical accounts, credit cards, entertainment. I just create a family folder. Any password I put in there, I file in the folder, is available to Lisa at any time. You can even, you know, share it via email or invite family members by email. The families thing is great. And there's one more thing. They don't put it in the app, but I think it's really important. The emergency access feature where you can designate a survivor. So if you become disabled or you pass away, your survivor, your pet, in my case, Lisa, my spouse, and my my son, or I think it's my daughter, can request access to my folder, to my passwords. That way, if I'm gone, it makes it much easier for them to get into my accounts and, you know, execute my will and all that. I think that's so important. Nobody thinks about that. What happens to you if you're disabled? 13.5 million people have signed up for LastPass and are loving and trusting it. I'm one of them. In fact, I signed up my whole business and my family. That's a pretty good testimonial. I use it for everything. LastPass.com/twit. Find out how they can help you. LastPass.com/twit. We thank them for their support. Thank you for supporting the Pet Tech Guy podcast by using that special URL. We are here to party with Dick DiBartolo. He's dance. Now, I don't know that line at all. I think it sounds like Dance with the Boogie Divine, but I'm sure that's not right. Do you ever, you know what they call those? Mondegreens?
Yes.
Mondegreens, I think they call them. When you hear a lyric and you think it says one thing when it really says another. You ever do that?
I do that all the time.
I bet you do. You seem like the type. In fact, that seems like the source of your sense of humor, frankly. It's like crazy, you know, wordplay.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, also, I was just thinking what you do with your LastPass thing that your son has the password and your wife has the password.
In case I kick the bucket.
Yeah. But in my will, they have to call me to make sure I'm deceased.
Are you dead? Because I need
yes,
to get
thank
into the
you. Otherwise,
Comcast account.
And I have a little recording that says, yes, I'm dead.
Yes,
go
I'm
ahead.
Dead. Actually, they kind of, that's how LastPass does it. I was doing a LastPass ad in the break for our podcast listeners. LastPass, which is a password manager, if you designate, like I designated Lisa as emergency contact or emergency access, they send me an email saying, Lisa's trying to get in your passwords. Are you okay?
Oh, my goodness.
And then if you don't answer, and you can set the time frame from a day to a month, if you don't answer, then they go, okay, I guess he's dead. And they let him in. Isn't that clever? So if she tries to access it now, he'll send me an email saying, no. They call it a dead man switch.
I think that's great. I think that's great.
And the word mondegreen, I just looked it up.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Comes from a writer, Sylvia Wright, coined the term in 1954. There was a Scottish ballad where they, as part of the words, they say, and laid him on the green. And she thought that was, and Lady Mondegreen.
Oh.
So
that's very
Dance with the Boogie Divine is my Mondegreen.
Oh, okay. Okay. That reminds me of a kid saying the prayer, and he says, Our Father, who art in New Haven,
yes.
How'd you know my name?
That's exactly it. So Dick usually brings us some crazy gadget or gizmo. That's what we call him, the Gizwiz, the Gizmo Wizard. What do you got?
I am
us?
Going to shock you today, Leo.
Please, is it a gadget that shocks people?
Well, hopefully not. But I went to the auto show.
Yes.
And I saw the first. I've not seen a lot of electric trucks. I don't know if there are a lot of them around.
Did you see the Rivian?
Yes, Leo. I saw the truck. I did some video on it. And then 2 days later, I opened the New York Times. And the truck that I was walking through is in the Times because Ford has put in
$500 million. Yeah.
And did you know that Amazon put in $700 million?
Wow.
So that Rivian can start building delivery trucks.
Oh, of course, for Amazon. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. I know you don't even own a car, never have, but Have you ever had an electric boat? Do they make those?
You know, I've been out in an electric boat. Electric boats right now are incredibly slow.
Yeah.
I mean, but like a car, you're moving across the water, maybe just at 6 knots.
Oh.
But it is quiet.
Yeah. I love my Tesla. I love electric cars. I think they're the future.
Well, what I liked about this is, and I don't know if all cars are this way, is they explain that each of the four wheels has its own motor so that it left a lot of room in the car. So what I love is they have this thing called the gear tunnel. So the gear tunnel is a little open, a door toward the back of the truck that opens on either side. So if you were a water skier or a snow skier.
You could put your skis in there.
Yes, right. All the way across. And also, we talked about that little doorstep that you can get up to the roof of the car. The door has a 300 to 350 pound weight limit. So you can actually fold the door down, make it a step to get up onto the roof. And now, Leo, the pricing, I think, is the pricing the way the original Tesla was, because it's $69,000.
Yeah, it's a little pricey, huh?
Yeah, and about, I think he said, closer to 61,500 with the federal rebate. But they're talking about the end of 2020 for the truck and then 2021 for the SUV they're working on. But it was a clever idea to come in with two categories that not a lot of other companies are building.
I didn't know they were making an SUV. That's interesting.
They're doing the truck first and then the SUV. 230 mile range, but you can pay extra and get up to a 400 mile range for the truck. So
Rivian,
I was just
Rivian. Yeah, there's been a lot of press about them lately. I think this is good. I love seeing this. And you know, trucks drive around. I get a lot of stuff from Amazon. I always feel guilty about all the trucks delivering all this stuff. But I think if it were electric, I'd feel a lot better about it.
Yeah. And water fording, 3 foot. I think the guy said 3 feet water fording. Does that mean you can drive into water
three feet of water?
Yeah.
Wow.
For the truck.
Wow.
Maybe I can go boating. Maybe I will.
It is a boat. They just need to put a propeller on that thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so funny that a guy who has never owned a car, because he lives in Manhattan, it'd be silly to own a car, went to the car show.
I know, but I didn't look at cars. I looked at trucks.
Okay. You never owned a truck either, though, right?
No, but if I had, I like the idea of this because you can throw tons of stuff in it. It's very rugged.
I would love to have this. I think it's awesome. Yeah. Was it comfortable inside?
Yeah, it's really neat. And I love the fact, you know, back in the bed, I guess it's a truck bed, you know, there's 12-volt outlet and there's charging ports. And
we put solar panels on the house so we could charge the Tesla free.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that was makes me feel good as I'm driving around that it's basically zero footprint. You know,
Could you like charge the Tesla in how many hours?
Oh, I have to charge it. You have to kind of have to charge it overnight on a home charger because it doesn't have enough amperage.
Right. So you charge it during the day.
Well, I go home and I charge it when I go to bed and it's ready for me in the morning. That's kind of cool, too. You always have a full tank of gas. You don't have to. I haven't been to a gas station except to put air in my tires in the last 3 years. It's awesome.
Do they welcome you just for air?
We haven't seen you in so long.
Yes.
No, they charge
you. Would you come by for the air?
Makes me mad. That'll be $1.50. What? To fill my tire? Yeah. You're not giving us any gas money. Give us some quarters. You'll find Dick's review of the Rivian and his video at his website, gizwiz.biz, GIZWIZ.BIZ. Click the Gizwiz Visits the Tech Guy link. Right below that, the What the Heck Is It link, that's that big button there will take you to the contest, and there's only a few.
Yeah, just 3 days.
A few days left, yeah, to figure out what the heck this cell phone mattress is. Oh, I'm sorry, I gave it all away. It's a close-up picture. That's the problem. But if you figure it out, you can get in the drawing for up to 6 autographed Mad magazines for the right answer, 12 for the silliest wrong answer. Dickie D, gizwiz.biz. And don't forget his podcast, gizwiz.tv. Dick, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir. I'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks to our musical director, Big Pee-wee. You can put the baton down for the night. Thank you, Pee-wee. To our phone angel, Kim Schaffer, thanks to you for joining me. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.